Do you hear that, Maya? Good job. She's on it.
I know she's on it.
She is on it.
Nothing but wonderful staff in this committee.
That's right.
Well, mostly.
When they behave.
When the committee behaves, we all behave.
Oh, we got everybody important.
Thank you. Yes, we're all here.
Yes.
I was actually going to hand him the gavel, like you instructed
you
us last time.
Weren't you in the health committee, my first
time? That is what you should do. I'm going to call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for, what do we have today? Oh, my goodness, April's almost over. April 29th.
Amazing.
And open up a public hearing on House Bill 233. Madam Administrator, what do we have here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 233 requires the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority to suspend medical assistance provided to persons expected to remain in the Department of Corrections custody more than a year. Currently, they terminate them. Requires the reinstatement of medical assistance for the persons in DOC custody during the periods of external hospitalization, declares an emergency effective on passage, left the Senate floor with 29 ayes, one excused. It does have a fiscal impact statement of explanation only.
Okay. Our first panelist is Representative Parrish. Have at it, ma'am.
We're currently members of the three of you on the committee right now. I am here today to wholeheartedly come and support Senate Bill 233, which actually wasn't on my radar because it was a committee bill. And I want to tell you, I think, in part where some of this came from. I'm really appreciative of the Department of Corrections for bringing this bill forward. In my freshman year, in 2011, we passed, also fairly unanimously, I believe, House Bill 3536, which is a bill that essentially does this exact same thing of suspending rather than terminating health care benefits from the Oregon Health Plan for people in the prison population. And I'll just briefly explain why I think that was important then and why I think extending it 4 years later is important now. When my sister was in and out of jail, a lot of what she was there for was mental health and addiction fueled crimes, and we spend a lot of money in corrections trying to stabilize people, and so when you have somebody who is drug addicted or has severe mental health challenges and they have not been on their meds and they show up in our correction system for any period of time, we spend a lot of money trying to stabilize them. What was happening prior to 2011 for people who were in jail with a year or less was we would, if they were on the Oregon Health Plan and they moved into incarceration, we would terminate those benefits. Now, if they're in jail for up to a year and you spend a whole lot of time trying to stabilize them with mental health and treatment and addiction services, and then you send them back into a lottery system for the OHP plan, it could take up to 90 days to get back those benefits. They are eligible for them by income. Get those benefits back. And we were only sending you out with a 30-day script for any meds that you were on. So you can see the problem that the gap caused of a 60-day window where somebody wasn't getting those benefits. And the recidivism that was then, increased, that opportunity to recidivate increases. So this bill does the exact same thing, except now we're looking at prison populations of a year or longer of incarceration and people coming out. So if you had the health benefits going in, we would suspend rather than terminate, and then you would have them coming out. And in our longer corrections programs, we make even more investments in mental health and stabilization for people who have drug addictions and mental health problems. So it was my bill in 2011, and we got that passed, and all of our Human Services Committee at the time sponsored on, and it was totally bipartisan in our 30-30 tie. I'm thrilled to see this passed out 29-0. There was somebody absent that day, so I think that other absent person, I'm hoping they would have been a yes too. I'm hoping to see this move out of this committee, get to our floor for a vote, and that we can put this into practice. I think it is a really critical piece of moving people back in from corrections and getting them back onto their life, and healthcare is a huge part of that, making sure that they are stabilized with meds and addiction treatment and services and things that are provided by our Oregon Health Plan. But for that 60-day window when people are, without their meds and they're trying to transition and they can't get to a doctor and they're waiting for the Oregon Health Plan to kick in for them, even if they can get through the lottery, if they have no children, they're not necessarily prioritized. This is a really big deal. And what I've heard anecdotally from people. We never asked in 3536 to do any study of is this working. But what I'm hearing anecdotally from people in counties is that the revolving door caused by addictions and mental health is still revolving, but maybe not spinning quite as fast. So I am just going to urge your support on this bill. Get it to the floor. Let's make it into law. Let's extend something that we know anecdotally is working, extend it to that population. And I'm just really glad that the Department of Corrections has brought this forward. They didn't ask me to testify. I just saw that it was coming and felt really compelled that needed to share the story of where we started 4 years ago, and now we're expanding this, and I thank them for making it a committee priority.
Are there any questions of Representative Parrish? Thank you. And we'll have the Department of Corrections witness.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you letting me testify, Chair Greenlee.
I'm going to leave this hearing open and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 430. And ask Senator Cruz to join us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 430 makes explicit that state boards' authority to deny licensure due to convictions for sex crimes. It applies to the Board of Psychologist Examiners, licensed social worker, and licensed professional counselors. Left the Senate unanimously with 30 ayes.
Welcome.
Welcome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Cruz, Senator, Senate District 1. And just an anecdotal thing, I remember, Mr. Chair, when I was in the House and I testified before a Senate committee and wondering how they could function with so few people. Now that I've been in the Senate for a long time, I'm wondering how this works, but that's a whole other subject. So, Mr. Chair.
Strong chairmanship.
Huh?
Strong chairmanship.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have always admired your work ethic. So.
Well, I think back fondly on 2003, where you let me sit with the committee that you chaired.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely.
A good year. We did good things.
Yeah, and we have done some good work since then as well, Mr. Chair. So Sandy did a good job of describing this bill. I think the authority exists now, but we just felt it appropriate to make it very explicit that if somebody in one of these boards has been convicted of a sex crime, they probably shouldn't be a therapist. So it's really no more complicated than that.
And, it is within the scope right now,
Mr. Chair, I don't think that this is a world changer. It just makes it explicit and gives them the authority, so there's no question about it. That's really what the bill does.
Are there any questions of Senator Cruz?
It's good to see you all.
You get away easy.
I just do simple bills.
A simple alfalfa farmer, right. I know the story. Thank you very much.
Okay, we need to have another conversation here soon, so you and me. But okay,
it's a
we'll
deal.
Arrange that. Okay.
Is there anybody else on this bill?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much.
I will close the public hearing. I said, is there anybody else?
That's right. Can you stand at ease for a second? Agency has been submitted in sign-ups on the call on the
range. I'm going to invite a witness up. Okay, there you go. Your call a witness, please. Just call the next witness.
Randy Harnish, please.
There you go. Will you join us and tell us what it looks like from the
social
other
workers.
Side of the... You're not going to announce that you've been convicted of a sex crime, are you?
No, right? Thank you.
Good.
Chair Greenlee, Vice Chair Sinos, and Hayden, members of the committee, my name is Randy Harnish, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Licensed Social Workers, and for a brief shining moment, I was the Interim Director for the Board of Counselors and Therapists, and psychologist examiners when this bill came up the first time. So I've now had an opportunity to talk to the current executive director of those other two boards. This bill, very well intentioned. The clear goal is to explicitly delineate those sex crimes, felonies and misdemeanors that would authorize our boards to withhold licensure. As we've looked at this and had the opportunity to run this by our legal counsel, for this bill to be most effective, we would like to see a couple changes. First of all, the sections that are amended in the bill now refer specifically to new applicants only. We would think that it makes sense that if this is going to apply to new applicants, our boards should have the authority to take the same action on those explicitly listed crimes against current licensees who might be convicted of that, of those same offenses, and also on for those who are renewing their licenses. So rather than limit it to just new applicants, we could it would be applicable to all licensees. Currently, that's the way the statutes are written. The second thing is, it uses the language of the bill refers to withhold licensure. All three of the boards use the terms deny, suspend, revoke, or refuse to renew. So if, again, we're going to make this a clean implementable bill for our boards, if we were using those same words rather than throw a new word, withhold, that doesn't really fit in any of those four categories cleanly. It would require us to kind of figure out what does withhold mean and how do we implement it. It would make sense to use the words that we already use. And the third issue, which is one of those lawyerly things that our DOJ legal counsel pointed out.
That's why you have to spend so much money.
That's exactly right, sir. There is an existing statute, ORS 670.280, subsection 2, that currently states that a licensing board may not deny, suspend, or revoke an occupational or professional license solely for the reason that the applicant or licensee has been convicted of a crime, but may consider the fact of the conviction in relationship to the requirements of the occupation to determine the fitness of the person to receive or hold the license. That's currently on the books, and we would want to make sure that whatever bill moves forward includes some reference to that existing restriction to make sure that we don't set up a conflict. So with those three items
addressed. Would you read that again, please?
The last section? Mm-hmm. This is ORS 670.280, subsection 2. It says that a licensing board may not deny, suspend, or revoke an occupational license or professional license solely for the reason that the applicant or licensee has been convicted of a crime, but may consider the fact of the conviction in relationship to the requirements of the occupation to determine the fitness of the person to receive or hold the license. And as I read that, that means you can't just look at the conviction record and say, thou shalt not be licensed. You have to look at that conviction and then look at the requirements of the profession or occupation and make a connection between the two. So we just want to make sure that whatever we have, if we have authorization to refer to this list of delineated sex crimes, that it addresses that restriction in this section. And our legal counsel said, you know, somewhere in the bill it needs to say something about notwithstanding ORS 670.280.
Could you work with my office to propose some amendments in case we decide to move this bill forward?
Absolutely. I'd be more than happy to.
And I think, I mean, it's a very different policy if you automatically need to withhold, not withhold, not provide penalties automatically to these sex crimes, as opposed to taking that into account in your decisions. Mr. Kinnaman? Okay. What do you think of this whole thing?
Well, I'm still getting up to speed a little bit about it, but I think basically the Board of Psychiatric Examiners already has the existing authority to deny a license, and I also think in terms of modalities of treatment, has a responsibility to verify whether or not this person is a risk to the public. And I'm having a hard time, frankly, seeing why we need to augment it. But if there's something we're missing, then that's we certainly always want to err on the side of protecting the public.
Perhaps you could be involved in these discussions as we
be happy to do that.
Representative Hayden.
Chair Greenlee, technical question more than to the content of the bill, and look forward to reviewing some amendments if those do come forward. But I noticed in there, with a quick scan, that we're talking about any conviction within the states. It is fairly common practice for practitioners to come out of, say, Canada and start practicing in the U.S. And with new, with the bill now, with just new applicants, if it stayed with new applicants, it seems like it might miss that, because it's just requiring from the states, and maybe if they came from another country, that wouldn't be caught. But if we do find a reason to go forward with it, I think it makes sense to have it any applicant with that history rather than new applicants, because there may be, I mean, the bill must have originated out of some concern, and, you know, waiting another 40, 50 years for this to take care of that concern may be too long of a time.
So. Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing, House Bill 430, and continue on the open hearing we have on House Bill 233. Would you call the witnesses, please?
Steve Robbins from Department of Corrections, please.
A witnesses. Okay. Please identify yourself, Mr. Robbins.
Good afternoon, Chair Greenlee, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Robbins. I'm the Health Services Administrator for the Oregon Department of Corrections. Very briefly, prior to 2014, when a person became incarcerated in the prison system in Oregon, their medical benefits, assistance benefits, were terminated, and they were no longer incarcerated, they needed to reapply from scratch. In 2013, House Bill 2087 passed, and it allowed the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services to simply suspend those benefits during incarceration, allowing those benefits to toggle on and off from suspension versus complete termination. With this change, the Department of Corrections has been able to transfer nearly $12 million this biennium alone of general fund expenditures for inmate medical costs over to Medicaid. There is a gap, however, in the original language, and this bill addresses that. The gap is that it only allows for suspension for those incarcerated less than 12 months.
Yeah, it was a jail issue rather than a prison issue.
Absolutely, Chair, absolutely. So this bill fixes that for the prison system, where obviously all of our folks are here for longer than 12 months. So it's for these reasons the Department of Corrections requests that the committee vote Senate Bill 233 out of committee with a due pass recommendation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Representative Hayden has a question.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlee. I haven't had to look it up, but I think one of the main concerns is mental health. Do you know, and I don't know the answer to this, I've tried to get to it here quickly, but what percentage of the people that have been incarcerated have a mental health diagnosis?
Chair Greenlee, Representative Hayden, we have two numbers that we use. 70% of the inmates that are in our system either self-report having had some diagnosis in the past, or they have one coming in, typically after they've gone through the assessment process and actually gone through intake and we've got them in our system. It's about 52% actually have a mental health code and a diagnosis.
And includes substance abuse as well as mental health.
That would be just mental health. In our case, substance abuse is not a part of the health services division. I could get those numbers for you. I'd be happy to do that.
Follow up?
Yeah.
I believe the intent of the bill is to not have gap of coverage, particularly for those struggling with a mental health diagnosis when they come out of that situation, to where they can continue appropriate medications, counseling, treatment, and not have a 90-day gap. Is that a correct assessment?
Chair Greenlee, Representative Hayden, that is correct. There are really two components there. There's the release component, which you're referring to, but there's also the component while they're in our custody. We actually have, through the Centers of Medicaid and Medicare, we have the ability, while they're in our care, if they go off-site into a hospital, for example, in an inpatient status for over 24 hours, we have the ability to run those through Medicaid as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what the jail bill was really important to the counties, because it really they were responsibility of the counties. If they weren't on Medicaid, if they're on Medicaid, they would. They had a portion of it. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 233 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 230.
Senate Bill.
I'm sorry, Senate Bill. We'll get used to the switch change over here one of these days. Madam Administrator, what have we got?
Senate Bill 230A specifies and requires healthcare workers to submit demographic, education, and other information to the healthcare workforce regulatory boards. Specifies that the individual submit the information when renewing a license with the board. It shifts the report who to report to from the Office of the Oregon Health Policy and Research to the Oregon Health Authority. It sets a January 1, 2016 operative date, but has an emergency clause, Mr. Chair. There is a fiscal impact statement of explanation. Left the Senate floor, 21 ayes, one no. And we have Lisa Angus from the Health Authority here to speak to the bill.
Please join us.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Angus. I'm the Director of Policy Development at the Office for Health Policy and Research at OHA. And I'm here just to give some brief background on Senate Bill 230, which effectively adds a number of licensing boards to an ongoing healthcare workforce data collection effort. And the goal of that effort and this bill, frankly, is to give policymakers and industry and education leaders a better understanding of where the healthcare workforce is at and where it's going, what the future needs would be. The bill came out of House Bill 2009 in 2009. It's not a tax credit bill. Yeah, the premise is to piggyback on renewal of licensure to ask professionals some additional questions about their demographics and their practice characteristics and future practice plans. We work, as per the original bill, we work with seven boards who were named in that statute and have been working with them since 2009. There's another, and that's boards of medicine, nursing, dentistry, pharmacy, PT, OT, and dietitians. Another three boards currently participate with us voluntarily, including social workers, psychologists, and professional counselors and therapists. The folks participating voluntarily have been great, but unfortunately we don't get 100% response rate. It's closer down to 30%. What this bill does is ask the additional, most of the additional healthcare workforce licensing boards to participate in the effort. The data are reported in the aggregate only. This isn't data about, say, continuing education or past criminal offenses. It's all about your sort of practice characteristics and getting a sense of what the workforce looks like and where it is. My written testimony that should be on record has some links to examples of reports that that have come out of these data. And every other year, we put out a more comprehensive report that's pretty descriptive that sort of says, here's the trends, changes in workforce supply in these licensees over the past couple years, comparisons by age, gender demographics. We have a new one coming up very soon. I have one draft show and tell copy, and we also sent it to committee staff, so it should be available. I'm not sure if it's posted yet. The bill would expand the number of boards participating in it. The bill doesn't specify it has an effective date, but doesn't specify a time frame for each of those individual boards to come on. Instead, we anticipate working with each board and figuring out what makes sense, given boards have really different licensing cycles. Some boards are in different places in terms of whether they do online renewals or not. It's much easier to add a handful of questions to an online renewal than do a separate survey. And also where boards are in terms of budget limitations. So the way that the database is funded now, the way the data processing and cleaning is funded is by $5 per licensee per biennium fee. Most boards, not all, but most choose to pass that fee on to the licensee this time. So just to close, I mean, the value of this information is that it provides a much more comprehensive picture of the healthcare workforce than we would have otherwise. It helps answer questions like ones that have come up in this committee about where is the workforce, where are the gaps. And Oregon, just to sort of say to close, is one of the few states with this kind of comprehensive data collection effort on workforce, so it really sets us apart in our ability to look at trends, look at where there's gaps, and see what changes are coming up. So I'll stop there, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
It would have been helpful to have that information in occupational therapy when we were looking at a question on the rural distribution of occupational therapy.
Yep, I think there are more than, Mr. Chair Green, like there, I think, I can't remember the exact count. I think there was an estimate that there were just 12 counties that didn't have any occupational therapists. Mm-hmm. So the example of the report, or the section of the report that I was able to provide today, because it's still in production, doesn't have that exact figure, but the final report has a two-page front and back for every county. And so it runs out the number of professionals in the categories we capture in every county, and then it has a multi-page profile for each occupation. So among occupational therapists, what's the age, just, you know, age range, where are they, what's the race, ethnicity distribution, that kind of thing. So that it's crossing my fingers it's within the next 2-3 weeks.
Make sure our committee members get a copy of that report. That'd be very
We'd be very happy to.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 230 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 280. And Administrator, what do we have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 280 changes the Board of Medical Imaging 12-member composition. It specifies that one member must be a licensed physician who is a radiologist and in good standing. Specifies three must be licensed physician and five must be actively, an additional five must be actively engaged in medical imaging licensees. Requires that if the board cannot fill the physician's spots, the governor may appoint any combination, and it identifies the combination of candidates to be considered. This has an emergency clause effective on passage. There is no fiscal and no revenue impact. And we have Ed Conlow and Thomas King right here before
right
us.
There. Let's
Excellent.
Go.
Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, my name is Ed Conlow. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging. I brought along Thomas King, the former board chair, in case anybody has any tough technical questions.
He likes coming.
Senate Bill 280 makes a couple changes to the board structure. Currently, the board has 12 members, four physicians, five imaging licensees, and three public members. In the 4 years I've been here, we've only been able to fill one physician slot, and there's been three vacancies. What this bill does is it says that, and we work this language out with the medical association. If take the three vacancies, if there isn't a physician applicant available to fill that slot, the governor can fill them with either licensees or public members, so we can fill the vacancies. The other thing the legislation does, it clarifies, the current law says that a licensee member of the board must be practicing, but it doesn't say what practicing means. This clarifies by saying they must be actively engaged, and it says that actively engaged means either you're directly practicing medical imaging, you go in every day and you're shooting images, or else you're supervising or administering a program in a health facility or an educational institution, or else you're retired from active practice for up to 5 years. In any of those cases, you would still need to have an active license. Thank you.
If you'd retired within 5 years, you would still have an active license?
Some do.
So it would need an active license. It couldn't be somebody who retired last year but
if you didn't have an active license, you could only be then you could be a public member. But if you have to have a license to fill one of those five licensee spots.
Why couldn't it? I mean, if you want somebody who has been retired for less than 5 years, what difference does it make whether they have an active license or not? I mean, it seems to me that would open up some more resources for you.
And I think the idea of the legislation was that you would have someone from each licensure modality serving on the board. So I think if you you know, and I wasn't here when the legislation was enacted. Tom was, and you were, but I think the idea was you were going to have five people on the board who had an active license. One of those people could be any of those people could be a licensee, but they'd have to have an active license. If it was someone who was retired and let their license expire, they could still be on the board, but they would be a public member. So it's still available to them.
Yes, sir.
Oh, nice to see you.
Nice to see you again. This will probably be my swan song as I moved over to Bend now and I'm resigned from the board. So all I have to say about this, Chair Gainlett, is that...
name, please.
Pardon?
Your name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Thomas King, and I'm from Deschutes County now. I want to say just that the retirees, a lot of them will keep their registries active because it only takes 24 hours of CE in a biennium. And the only difference is they would just have to keep their license active. There is a retirement status for their certification from the registry and then go into retired status, and then they're not responsible, but they're recognized as been in the field for a long time. So there's a couple of options out there available. But the problem when we went before to get the board was it wasn't so much x-ray, sonography, and that. It was more the physicians. And so... as far as retired status on that goes, I couldn't comment. But anyway, I support the bill.
It would seem to me that recent retirees would be a good pool. They might not think of this, but this might be something they might really enjoy doing. So you might, if you're having trouble filling slots, you might really simply contact the new retirees and ask whether they'd be willing to be considered for a slot. That would get, they're not so busy. Mostly trying to figure out what to do at this point. There's only so much golf you can play. Senator Bueller, what do you think about that? Is that a feasible thing, do you think? It would seem to me they would enjoy doing it at that point of their career. So we might think of simply making that a retiree who's retired within 5 years, whether they have an active license or not. That would be a simple amendment.
To serve as a licensee in one of the
serve as a in a physician slot.
The only qualifier would be that then they're if you're retired and you're not keeping up your license, then you're not doing the CE. Maybe you're not as up on the new developments in the.
This would be a form of CE form. Yes, it would.
Sure.
Anyway, if you would like us to consider that, we would be happy to consider that as an amendment to this. Let us know.
Okay.
Fast. not too fast. We're not going to be back. We're working on the bill for another couple of weeks, but
we'll run
out of time. Are there any other questions of the panel? Well, thank you very much for coming. Thanks for coming over the mountain.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 280, Senate Bill 280A. We are. We have no meeting on Friday.
Correct.
Wow.
And there's
thank
no floor
you, sir.
On Friday.
Thank you,
either.
Sir. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, we're going to have a long floor tomorrow.
Yes, but I think we better be prepared for getting interrupted on Monday as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it's possible there may be some debate on the. From the weapon background check, Bill.
I hope not. Yeah, we can all
I think there's been enough.
See what you can do about that.
I'll try.
See what you can do about that.
Don't put much stock in my ability to influence that.
So maybe we will gather on Monday. And we are adjourned. Wow. 35-minute meeting.
I know.
Maybe. 35-minute meeting.
I know.
Maybe. We are adjourned. Wow.